Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Recorded live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Hey, everybody. This is Nikki Nellis live in the Line Hotel, and it's Industry Night, your weekly deep dive into all the D.C. food and wine and cultural fun that's going on around the area. So if you're here at the Line Hotel today because you're a tourist and you're traveling around, you can always tune in to what I'm doing here on Industry Night, or also check out what's going on the list or youwantit.com. It's an online e-zine. It goes out to over 40,000 subscribers, and we list every food and wine event going on in the DC metro area. So if you're looking for something fun to do or eat or try, it will be listed there. Of course, you can hear me every Sunday live on Foodie and the Beast with my husband, David. We just celebrated our 11-year anniversary. And then let's see, what else do I do? Oh, you can always hear me on WTOP talking about the who, what, where, why, and when of the DC food scene. Also, of course, follow me at Nikki Nellis, NYCCINELLIS, on all those social media platforms, because I've got lots to say and I put it all out there. And actually, if you're listening right now, you can tune in to my Instagram feed, maybe? Or my Facebook feed. You can turn into both my Instagram feed and my Facebook feed, and both will pop up. You'll see me in studio today with my very special guest, a return guest, actually, Greg Engert. You know him as one of the most renowned beer sommeliers in the nation, but he is a partner and beer director at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, which is a local restaurant group that actually started as Neighborhood Restaurants, but has really exploded over the last 15, 16 years and has honed in on some amazing concepts that are here in DC, but they are breaking new ground and doing new things, not just here, but also nationally as well. And Greg has been with Neighborhood Restaurant Group for how long now, Greg?
13 years. Yeah.
So, Greg, when you started at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, were you as hot to get into beer as you are now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I had already begun my career in beer 15 years ago in 2004 when I...
Oh, you were at the Brickskeller?
Brickskeller, right. I left grad school and was looking for a new challenge, something, a new direction, and got involved with...
Okay, wait, what were you in grad school for?
I was in grad school for modernist fiction, English literature broadly. I was supposed to be a professor of English, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Decided beer is better.
Yeah. So I had, I'd been lucky enough to travel quite a bit and had always enjoyed beer that I'd been, introduced to as I traveled. And then coming into D.C., I started going to the Brickskeller, which, for those of you who don't know, the Brickskeller is now defunct, but it was America's first beer bar. It started in 1957.
And they had
a ton of beer, 2,000 beers.
Right, they had all these beers, but they weren't necessarily known for just good beers. I mean, if you were a beer geek,
had everything.
You could get a good beer, but like I remember when I first moved to D.C., it was like you could get pineapple beer. Like they had all these
Crazy
beers,
and
if
you studied at in Portugal and you studied abroad and you drank the least flavorful lager that they had there, we would have that in bottles like Sagres or Superbock or something like that. Right. So it wasn't just like the best beers in the world; it was like every beer you can get your hands on. But it was very, very cool. And I started going there and I was just blown away. I had no idea that world of beer existed. And then a friend of mine started working there. He also came down we both went to Middlebury College in Vermont. He was an actor, so he came down and didn't have, work during the evenings as much as he wanted to, so he was working there. And then he was like, you're obviously burning out on grad school and academia. You should come and work here. And I was like, that sounds amazing. And I fell in love with hospitality first and foremost, and service and the social nature of everything. And then just basically traded in my literary pursuits for beer pursuits, and I had everything at the ready there. You know, everything was at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. And so I just started going into it. At the same time, I realized so many things weren't being handled properly at the Brickskeller.
Training, from a hospitality standpoint?
Yes, totally. Okay. That training.
Well, to be fair to the Brickskeller, yeah. It was a bar, and yeah. Times were different.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know,
right.
I think
Yelp,
nowadays...
Yelp didn't exist, so people
right, exactly.
Get feedback.
You know, they would call Phyllis Richmond or, you know, right into the post and be like, man, I'm upset about this.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, like, but at the same time, I felt that beer at that point needed the care, the respect, the service, and the passion of service mm-hmm. that wine had been afforded. And mm-hmm. it wasn't happening there. So I started...
Were you seeing it in other places?
No.
I mean, not in D.C., but like, had you
no.
gone to Chicago or L.A. or even New York? Nothing
no.
was going on in New York.
At those times, no, there were places like the Ginger Man that had amazing selections and were frankly probably more comfortable places to drink than mm-hmm. the Brickskeller for some people. Because the Brickskeller was kind of like just embraced its dive nature as it grew up, as it grew older.
Right.
An amazing place, but nobody was caring for the beer. And so that's what I wanted to do. And I met Michael Babin, who had just opened Rustico in Alexandria, our mm-hmm. first beer spot. It was our fifth spot overall and our first beer spot. And
wait, it was the fifth spot. So...
Yeah. Evening Star. Planet Wine.
Vermilion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tallulah.
Right. Forgot about
Ybar.
And
yeah.
Ybar. Tallulah Ybar. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, and so I came aboard to shore up the beer program at Rustico, do a lot of the things that I wanted to do, but there were so many things that we couldn't do at Rustico. So right from the start, I was talking about Church Key. And I came aboard to do Church Key and Birch and Barley, which would happen 3 years later in 2009.
Right.
We just celebrated our 10th
year
anniversary. Yeah, so I came to Neighborhood Restaurant Group raring to go on the beer front mm-hmm. and found amazing partners with which to do it.
Well, and for those of you who don't know about Church Key and Birch and Barley, I mean, it is one of the preeminent beer restaurants and bars in the country. So you were one of the first ones to put... How many lines did you put 50, in?
50 drafts. But at that time, there were plenty of places that had lots of drafts. And I always say, like, getting the beer is that's the easy part.
Okay.
It's the draft, the cleaning. It's
cleaning the lines.
Yeah, that it's expensive. It takes a long time. Nobody does it the way we do.
And then you have to change the menu to reflect what
that.
You put in the right.
And then update the menu online
right.
and on all the beer sites, but. But we were the first place in the country, and maybe the world, I don't know that, but I know definitely in the country, to install draft temp controls.
Okay.
So like just like with wine, mm-hmm. you don't want to be served, Cabernet mm-hmm. at 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
And you don't want to be served Suave at 65 degrees Fahrenheit. We wanted to do the same thing with beer. And beer until that point had been relegated to...
being ice cold.
35 yeah, right. degrees for everything. Bud Light, which is a great temp for Bud Light. But
right.
also the best new West Coast IPA was served at the same time. So that nobody was doing that. So we adjusted it so that we could serve everything at either 42, 48, or 54 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we built a restaurant dedicated to amazing food, service, hospitality, but also... beer pairing.
Right.
And so even now, 10 years later, there is still, I'm shocked by this, there's still no place in the country that is consistently temperature controlling their beers the way that we do.
Hmm.
And there's still no place in the country that has dedicated themselves to beer and food pairing the way that Birch and Barley has.
Isn't that fascinating? Given also in the last 10 years, if you look at the change in beer culture.
Right.
Right? I mean, the beer scene here in D.C. alone... the craft beer scene has grown.
It's blown up, but it's fetishized too. That's been the problem. You know, I was dreaming of a wine world for beer.
Right.
And it got that to a degree, and we keep pushing for it. But like, what didn't happen was that it happened everywhere. In a lot of ways now, it's like there's lots of cool beers out there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are rarer than others,
mm-hmm.
and that's what draws attention. People like to line up to get rare beers, trade them online, sell
right?
Because
like you guys do a lot of rare beers
right.
at Birch
yeah.
and Barley and Church Key, and there'll be a line around the block.
Right.
And I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I like when I ask people like, "Who
why,
are you?
Why are you here?
Yeah. What do you do?" Like I want to take a census.
Right. And I'm not complaining exactly. And to that point, I'm not complaining that
no.
there are rare things. But it's like, unfortunately, it's a lot of times it's been about the just the object itself and it's objectified rather than the experience of enjoying that object.
Well, maybe it's still too young. You know, maybe you're hoping for something that people are not ready for just yet, but that you're helping them evolve
right. To
that place.
I hope so.
Then you started making your own beer.
Mm-hmm.
You went from bringing in beers, all the beers you wanted, talking to beer makers from everywhere, you know, becoming a cult of personality, so to speak. And why make your own beer at that point?
So Blue Jacket is now 6 years old, which is also shocking. Mm-hmm. It's gone that fast.
No, it really goes fast.
It's after drinking these amazing beers from all over the world, it's really hard not to be inspired to want to contribute your own voice to that conversation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As with like literature, when I was going to teach, I was teaching rather than writing. Mm-hmm. But I always thought like maybe one day I could also write. I think that's kind of what happened with beer. And so we wanted to reflect the lessons we'd learned, pay homage to the beers we loved, and also just start creating rather than being a conduit for creativity and continue to do that as well, of course. And as with everything else too, we said, what can we do that nobody's done before? And back in 2013, when we opened Blue Jacket, we set out to temperature control our beers, just like a church key, we still do that. We set out to have 20 different beers on tap. Nowadays,
that were all
Blue Jacket.
Blue Jacket, right? They were all yours.
Totally. And nowadays, you'll see that a lot. But back in 2013,
no, you weren't seeing that.
Brewers weren't doing that. And then to have Cask Ale, to have
sour beer,
bottle beers, like just kind of to do it all was pretty novice back then. And I'm glad to see that.
Well, I think
more
it was ambitious,
it. Yes,
right?
It was
ambitious.
It took us some time to get there. I think a lot of people thought we were going to come out of the gate on the level of maybe Church Key, but we had a lot of experience running restaurants. Not as many experiences running breweries, and we've totally found our voice along the way now. And I think in 2019, almost 2020, we are producing the best beers we ever have, still continuing to produce something for every palate and every plate that's coming out of that kitchen. You know, so if you come in and you want sour beers, got you. If you want classic lagers, done. You know, barrel-aged beers, you name it. And a lot of that success is what we've learned over time, but also the team that we've built. Our director of brewing operations, his name is Ro Gunzel.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for years, been trying to get him to come to brew with us at Blue Jacket for just as long. And about 2.5 years ago, he finally moved his entire family from Denver to D.C. and joined us. And at that point, we really took our beers that were already very good to a new level.
Well, and then now that you've made your own beers and you figured out sort of the business mechanics of it, because we're talking about multiple prongs in the hospitality industry, right? So we're talking about creating never-before-made beverage programs in restaurants, pairing food and beer. Then we're also talking about training, the hospitality angle of it, how you train your staff, because if you have 500 beers on the menu, how does the staff know about, you know, how can they answer the questions appropriately?
Exactly. Yep.
And then you build a brewery, figure it out, launch a restaurant alongside of it, and create your own product. And then you decide, or not you, but you and Michael Babin decide that there's yet more that you want to do. So now, how many properties does Neighborhood Restaurant Group have right now in the D.C. market?
I think
18?
Yeah, 18. And I do want to say, too, the other thing that we did, like, even after Blue Jacket, is that we opened Church Key-esque beer bars and restaurants with a new specialized focus.
Like
two
the
of
Sovereign.
Those. Sovereign, right?
Right.
In Georgetown. Our tribute to the greatest beers of Belgium. Mm-hmm. And then Owen's Ordinary in North Bethesda, where we bring temperature controls, knowledge, delicious, like, pub, tavern, food to Maryland Brewing, which we love Maryland beers.
Well, what I think is really interesting about Owen's Ordinary, because it's near where I live, so I'm there often, it's not just a beer program to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, we go there to eat.
It's a tavern.
Right. Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's a restaurant.
Restaurant, yeah.
So, yes, can my husband get a great beer there? Absolutely.
Sure.
But I can also still get
Great wine.
My glass of wine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because, you know, there have to be labels and there have to be specialties. I get that. But we always have set out a neighborhood restaurant group to build amazing bars and restaurants first and foremost. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like you said, it's so funny sometimes people come to church, they're like, do you guys have wine here? I'm like, of course we have wine. This is a restaurant and a bar. We have amazing wine and we have amazing spirits and amazing cocktails, but we just happen to have more beer. And that's that. And it should always
be like
that.
But, you know, I think people, especially in today's age, there's so many restaurants that have rules, right? There's all these rules. And
the
people,
worst. Yeah.
And I mean, there are people who are like real rule followers and they go in and they're like, I mean, it's a beer restaurant. I should get beer, right?
Like
they don't want to break the rules. But to your point, what you all are doing makes most sense because at the end of the day, you are in the hospitality industry and it makes sense. For you, you can have your fabulous beer program, but if somebody says, yeah, tonight I want a gin and tonic, they should be able to get that.
And make an amazing one. Like, you know, like amazing.
Yes, and that is a really good point.
Yeah, and that's not hard to do. I've never understood that. Like, and that's why, so Nick Farrell is our spirits director.
And he's amazing.
He's amazing. And he's involved with all these programs. It's like, why would we not have phenomenal focused spirit programs at these places?
Right.
And same with wine and all that. And so at the end of the day, we need to be a great bar for the neighborhood in which we are situated, and we've always embraced that. And to your point about rules, you know, I think also on the service side, a lot of people have a lot of stupid rules. And one of our biggest mantras is say yes. It sounds simple, but like for anybody that come in, they want some. I was just training, I'm sure we'll get to this, but last week we had some intensive training in New York City because we're opening the Grand Delancey up there and next week, which is frightening and exciting. And, you know, we're training these really talented New York bartenders and servers. And I was going through, as we're talking as much about service and hospitality, the way that we serve beer, and the way that we treat our guests, as I was about beer history and things like that. But one of the big things that I said that, like, raised some eyebrows is, like, we don't have any rules about limits to tastes. So, you know, we always in all of our places, we have full glass pours and we have taster pours that we charge for.
Right.
But if you come in and you're like, hey, can I taste that?
Right.
We say, absolutely. Sure. But most places you go to, if you're like, people I think feel like wrong asking for like a couple tastes or something.
Well, you get
like that.
A taste of ice cream when you're at the ice cream store.
Exactly.
And I will taste 4 or 5 wines if I'm not happy with what I'm tasting.
Exactly.
If I'm going to pay $16 for a glass of wine,
I want you to like it. Right. So you'll come back, right? It makes sense to me.
Right.
But I just keep seeing these things online, like where these are nightmare stories that keep me up at night. But thankfully, we don't do this, like where some bartender decides that 3 tastes max.
Right.
And it's just like,
because he's bored with it, I'm done.
Yeah, right. And he just likes to, you know, be powerful and like and decide what goes on. So we have a rule. It's like, no taste. Honestly, if you want to come into Churchgate, and I'm not encouraging you to do this, but if you did, and you came in and wanted to taste 25 different beers in a row, like, we will do it.
Right.
You know, and so that's the thing that I think a lot of restaurants and bars still have to learn.
Well, so I don't want to go off on a tangent, but obviously we could about training staff and empowering them and hospitality in general. Mm. It's a... We're in a dearth, and not just here in D.C., but nationally, finding people who want to be a part of the hospitality industry and treat it as a career, as opposed to you know, just a drop-in job. And then to really, like, to me, the history that you give your servers on the beer gives them so much power.
Totally.
Because they can answer the, you know, they can be an authority. They can answer the questions. And I think that has to make them feel really good to be knowledgeable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And they're just, if they're interesting people, they're interested in things. They're learning something.
Right.
And you know, and everything can be applied. Nothing exists in a vacuum. So if you're interested in history, society generally, religion, we're going to give you interesting things to talk about there. But I do think that it is important to build those experiences. And I always talk about, how do we make sure everybody understands that serving and bartending and managing and cooking, these are professions.
Right.
These are not jobs that you just like anybody can do. They're really hard to do. If done properly, if you don't drink on the job. If you don't steal from your employer, right. if you don't...
I mean, I feel like these are rules for any profession.
Exactly.
I mean, right. Except for mine. I do have to drink in my profession.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, if you do study up on your own time, mm-hmm. if you taste and educate yourself, you know, and come to work really proud to learn and to share that knowledge with your guests, you are now, if you say yes, if you treat people well, if you kill guests with kindness, if you can... deal with a guest who's just going to be rude. Like, these are not easy things to do.
They're not easy to do.
So only certain people can do that, which means only certain people should be in this industry. And if they all do that well, then this is a profession. Mm-hmm. If they don't do any of those things well, and if just anybody does it, they treat you poorly or say no to how many tastes you want, then now we're not involved with the profession anymore. Now it's just some perfunctory job that anybody can do.
Exactly.
You know. So I think we've been great about kind of preaching that. Mm-hmm. I think the people that work with us really embrace that, and it's something I'm very proud of.
Well, you should be. And I mean, full disclosure, my son, Sam, when he graduated from college, he said after 4 years of school, I want to do what Greg Engert does. And I was like, yeah, you and every other 21-year-old kid who enjoys beer. But, you know, you guys started him at the very bottom. He was a dishwasher, I think, to start. Yep. And gave him the opportunity. And, I mean, I speak from experience. I mean, he had to change those lines. He was there until 6 o'clock in the morning, yeah. changing those lines and updating those menus and doing it. But he really learned the business from the ground up. And he's a lifer. I mean, he loves it.
Yeah, and he now is doing that exact same thing.
Right.
His new, like, you know, he's, and I'm very proud of that. And I love Sam, obviously, as you know. But it is not glorious work all the time. And that's why I always say, you know, serving craft beer does not a craft beer bar make. It is easy to get your hands on this beer. What's not easy is to yourself or your teammates to get them to stay up till 6 a.m. cleaning lines. Believe me, that's hard. They don't want to do that all the time, but if they do, there's a reason why. And if you can inspire people to do that, now you have something special.
Okay, so let's take that special. And you already have 18 spaces. And now Michael Babin, your fearless leader, is twisting things a bit. Now, I will tell my own story here. Probably 12 years ago, I was at a meeting. Michael Babin brought me in as sort of like a focus group. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to talk about building a food hall, probably where Blue Jacket is, in that area.
It was at the Wharf.
Was it at the Wharf?
Yeah, just to even more ironic.
Okay. Yeah. So, but I mean, and it was something
this
that...
This is before Union Market.
It was before Union Market happened. And I mean, I certainly felt flattered that he wanted my opinion on this. But I remember at the time, I mean, at the time, there was nothing. There was no Yards. There was no Union Market. There was no Shaw. I mean, none of these neighborhoods had any investment in it yet. It was probably like 2007. So it was like just as the crash was kind of happening.
Right.
And he wanted to do this food hall, which sounded really sexy. But I was like, yeah, I'm not driving to the Wharf. It was because it was also before the influx of people moved here. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, but he had this idea and he was so passionate about it. And now he's finally into it.
Yeah, right,
he's
exactly.
Finally getting into it.
12 years later.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, I mean, Michael shared a lot of ideas with a lot of people. And, you know, luckily we were able to be involved with Union Market with Red Apron.
Mm-hmm.
And
so did Union Market sort of elevate his bug to do it? Or was it an education? Was he like, okay, I see what they did. I like this. I don't like that.
Yeah, always an education. I think that what we are looking to do in the food hall area is completely different, frankly, than what Union Market has done. And I don't really think we've seen the food hall that we're going to do anywhere yet. And we could obviously talk about that. But I think it's always been education. It's kind of like me at the Bricks Gallery. Like, love this, love this, love this, would change this, this, and this.
Right.
And that's how we've been going. But I think Michael's always had the bug for the food hall since 2007. I mean, he was inspired by the Ferry Building in San Francisco and some others. But I think, frankly, I derailed him a bit from that with the beer projects.
Sure.
And, you know, his first love was chef-driven restaurants. He loves working with chefs.
And it, listen, in the interim, it's not like you guys didn't open, you know, Iron Gate. And I mean, you opened
Red,
other...
All the Red Aprons.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not like Partisan. Like, it's not like other things weren't happening.
So I think
happening.
We got distracted by what what we do well, you know? And yeah, so there came a time, and this is a really beautiful confluence that happened recently, where we said, okay, the DC market is extremely crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a
restaurant. What do
restaurant,
we mean?
Restaurant, bars. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of places opening all the time.
Yep.
And we contributed to that problem ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, by opening a dozen restaurants in the past decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, labor's been difficult to find great people who we can develop and stick
and
with us.
Maintain.
You know, and maintain, right. Uh-huh. And that's the thing. It's like the better you do and the more accolades you get, the better you look at people's resumes, you know, and, mm-hmm. And that's fair. You know, Sam is a great example of that. But right. like, you know, I mean, so it's hard. One of the reasons we love to expand is to give people the opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been important for us. Otherwise, people get stuck and hit the ceiling and grow elsewhere.
Sure.
So we kind of felt like the DC market was just getting it was getting tough. I think, and most people would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Restaurants and bars continue open, and at the same time, we've been being courted by a lot of developers and others outside of D.C. for quite some time now.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you. We do have to take a break. But when we come back, I mean, the incredible amount of restaurants that have opened, including yours, and you being approached all the time has to do with the massive, massive increase of real estate that's available in this city now compared to 15 years ago.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden, you know, everybody wants a restaurant in their building, right? I mean, we're...
Amenity.
Yeah. Right. Everybody wants it. All right. On that note, this is Nikki Nellis. I'm talking with Greg Anker. We're going to be talking about food halls and what they mean to Neighborhood Restaurant Group. We'll be back in just a sec. Everybody, welcome back. Industry Night at the gorgeous Line Hotel. It's a little depressing, though, because it's 5:30 and it's getting dark out, which is what happens after we fall back with daylight savings. So in studio with me today is Greg Anker. You know him as one of the most renowned beer sommeliers in the country. I don't want to say world. Can I say world? but if you haven't been to Church Key or Birch and Barley or... Blue Jacket to get a taste of his beers. I mean, Neighborhood Restaurant Group does have 18 properties in the DC area, so there's lots of places to see what Greg is doing. But as we were talking, just as before we took a break, so Greg, you guys at Neighborhood Restaurant Group are now getting into the food hall space. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the fact that there has been an explosion not only of restaurants in the DC market, but also of an explosion of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even if you look right across the street from the Line Hotel, there are two new, brand new condo buildings, both with room for restaurants. I mean, retail is dying because the rents are so high, retail can't survive.
Yeah.
And everybody wants somebody to pour liquor because that makes money.
Right. And it is a cool amenity, right? I mean, like if you live upstairs, this is your clubhouse.
Right.
You can go down there. Hopefully, maybe not. Maybe it's too focused or something for that, like every day, or maybe too expensive. But that's the idea. And you just don't want a bank in every building. That's your other option. So,
Or a CVS.
Right. And so, like, yeah, I mean, restaurants are it, but that sounds good, except for there's just only so many restaurants that can survive. I mean, two things on that I'll say is that, like I mentioned before, finding great people and keeping them happy and keeping them with you as you grow them is very difficult. And there's just not enough professionals in DC, I think, to keep all of these places operating on a high level.
I totally agree.
Compared to like maybe like New York or Chicago or something. Like
well,
that.
I think when you talk about New York or Chicago or LA, you know, you have people like your friend who are hoping to make it in acting.
Right,
so they
right,
know yeah. they already know what they have to do. They
right.
know they have to work in a restaurant while they're trying to make it big. But
exactly.
they know that that's their career until they
yeah.
do that,
and they're
right?
all in on it,
and they're all in,
and they have pride in what they do. Yeah, exactly. So that's a difficult thing we've run into. And then on the other side of it is just like with so many new restaurants popping up all the time, the dining public has certainly become
fickle.
It's just they just want what's new. You know, they check the box and then they move on. So it's kind of hard for bars and restaurants to stick around. We've been very fortunate, but other great restaurants. Have not, you know, you're kind of like, wow. So it's a dicey space. I think everybody would agree that restaurants and bars are tough. They've always been a tough business. And
well, I think the general public, you know, foodies, people who love the food space, if they haven't worked in it, you know, there's this general love for it, this like desire to be a part of it in some way. But there's also a complete lack of understanding of what it takes to run a restaurant and understanding the razor thin margins and what it takes to invest in the staff.
Yeah.
And then what happens when you lose that staff? You know, like
right.
I saw a Yelp review recently where somebody said the staff is always changing. And, you know, they took that as an indication that it was changing because there's something wrong with management.
Right.
And I was like,
it's not
I mean, that's such a myopic view. I was like,
and that may have been at one time a very good read, you know?
But now, to me, it's like what opened across the street and are they paying them $2 more an hour? I mean,
offering them partnerships, et cetera.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, and then they close 6 months later. No, exactly. So that's part of it. We're just being, you know, honest about the explosion. And like I said, meanwhile, we've been fortunate enough to get offers from people in other cities. And so we've always been interested in those meetings. We like taking them, talking about it. And I think we kind of felt once we got to a point where our team was developed and we were ready to both handle 18 properties locally, but also build satellite properties on the East Coast, that we would look into it. And the offers didn't go away. So now that's what we're doing.
So you start with Market Line.
Yeah.
In New York. That's opening up next week.
It is. But before we get to that, actually, let me just say this.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Roost because...
Okay, we can start
Because I think that's the interesting one, right? That's, you know, I just talked about how gun-shy we are about local expansion. Meanwhile, we are opening...
Right, a food hall.
a small 12,500-foot food hall in Hill East, I guess you call it, like 14th and Pennsylvania Southeast, so east of the Capitol building, in a 167-apartment
brand new building
called the Blackbird.
Right.
And talk about amenities. That's what we did there. Like they came, look, talk to us about, hey, would you develop a really cool
amenity? But they wanted a food hall
amenity.
Specifically?
No,
or they were like, can you help us figure this out?
They were like, let's talk. And I think we got there together. And, you know, this isn't Union Market. This isn't 18 plus vendors. This is, I think, 8 vendors. Altogether, including 2 world-class bars, which, of course, because that's what we do.
Right.
You know, an all-day coffee.
Well, let's go through it.
Yeah.
So you get to the Roost. What am I... I walk in. What happens?
So we're going to have a cafe and an all-day food vendor every day. Okay. That's going to be all day. Now, if business demands, we can open up some of our other vendors during the day as well. But this is a place that's going to primarily exist at night, we think.
Okay.
So of the other vendors, I have to be very careful about which ones I say and don't. But we have, you know, a Red Apron concept going in there.
We have the Hi-Fi Tacos,
which is also Nathan Anda, our chef and partner at the Red Apron Concepts. His taco concept, which is amazing.
I've had his tacos, and I've also had his tortillas, which he's making. And I know that there is some discussion as to whether or not he should make his own tortillas.
Right.
And I hate to add my opinion to that, because I'm sure it's not going to be what people want.
The answer is yes.
His tortillas are delicious.
I agree. The flour tortillas especially are just incredible.
Like, they're incredible. Like, I would just eat them.
I know, on their own.
They're
totally
amazing.
Well, I think he's pretty, he's down with it. So hopefully, I think that's going to happen. And then two bars, you know, Show of Hands, which is Nick Farrell's, our spirits director.
Now, how big are these spaces?
Well, the whole space is 12,500 square feet. So the
Nick's bar, how many seats at Nick's bar?
There's going to be, I think, let's see here. On the one side, like as it faces outward, there's probably a dozen seats or so. But then on the back side, there's a little speakeasy section that has like eight. But the cool thing is you can get his drinks
and
anywhere,
walk around.
And there's going to be shared seating all over the place. So you can get his drinks and go see.
You guys are going to do like a GoTab kind of system, or some sort of money, like something on your phone.
Yeah, you can order through a server. You can order through a bartender, or you can use your phone. And we are going to, the big thing about us that we do differently is we want to bring you food and beverage. Like if you're sitting in one of the shared spaces, that's nowhere near either my beer bar, Shelter, or Show of Hands, or Hi-Fi Taco. And you sit down, you go, somebody's like, I would love a low ABV cocktail from Nick Farrell. And somebody else is like, I would love one of Greg Engert's amazing draft beers. And then somebody else is like, I want some tacos. And then somebody else is like, I want this and that. You can order from a server or on your phone. If the server doesn't come back fast enough later, you can order on your phone. Like, we're trying to make it easy to eat and drink across the spectrum of flavors that we're offering here. And
that makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I hate bringing up Isabella's Place in Tyson's, but that was the problem with Isabella's. When he opened, he had, first of all, it was 40,000 square feet. So that was number one.
Massive.
Okay, but number two was he had all these different ice cream, coffee, bakery, seafood, steak, like whatever it was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Spanish. Like he had all these different iterations. And if you were sitting in the general area, you either had to get up and go get it, or you can order off a menu, but the menu didn't have everything available at all.
The places,
then it was kind of like a mess. You're like, so am I getting sushi and taco? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
the logistics are tough. Yeah,
but
totally.
It just wasn't working. And listen, I love Union Market. I think Eden's has done amazing things for the city. But to your point as well, you do go and everybody's like, I want this. And you can go sit at Gina's, or you can go sit at
Red Apron or Rappahannock.
But it's not as easy to be like, you know, okay, we're going to sit at Red Apron, but we're going to go get some oysters.
It's fragmented. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You
basically
can't
do it. Yeah. And, you know, we go to a lot of food halls. We were just at the beautiful Ponce City Market in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And basically what you find when you think about these things is a lot of food halls are really just collections of small restaurants.
Right.
You know, and that's not what we're trying to do here.
It's like a food court.
Yeah, yeah. But what we're trying to do,
pretty food courts.
And this is important for us. We're bar people. Like we build great bars.
Right.
We're trying to, and this is the whole thing about why we're expanding with beer now. We're trying to bring amazing drinks, whether they're beer, coffee, tea, spirits, cocktails, wine, you name it, into new venues where until now you maybe haven't had access to those beverages on that level.
Okay.
And another way to put it is to say the Roost is just an amazing bar that happens to have two bars.
Right.
And world-class food options.
Mm-hmm.
That's rather than a food court or a place where today we're having tacos and tomorrow we'll have pizza and we come in for lunch every day. Like, that's great and you could do that with us. But I really want people to think of it like, wouldn't it be cool if you could go into a world-class beer bar and get tacos and, you know, steak frites, and you name it, delivered to your table alongside that incredible beer. It becomes also, to say, I mean, food pairing. We thought we had had something going with Birch and Barley, where we've done a tasting menu with food and beer every day for 10 years.
Right.
But here, we have a, like, food pairing lab that I could not imagine, because I'm going to literally be able to say, here's 50 drafts. How do they go with eight
all
different cuisines?
Right.
You know, and so that's what I want to say. It's like, I think sometimes people don't think that, but I really want to foreground the bar experience. Like, imagine a bar where you get world-class stuff and the food is delicious,
right?
Not an afterthought, and you have chefs driving them, but not just one chef.
Multiple chefs.
And then we also at The Roost have, I think, something that every neighborhood desires and should have, which is an affordable, authentic, traditional, fun Italian red sauce joint that we're doing in concert with Matt Adler.
So that's going to be sit down.
That's sit down. Yeah. 65 seats.
Okay.
Has its own entrance. But it's, you know, right. It's right in the food hall space, okay. You know, so you have that too. And I just think that's something that most neighborhoods would enjoy.
Well, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So when are we looking at The Roost opening?
2020.
Yeah. And will it all open en masse? Or yes. Do you think, like, you'll start with the coffee program first and then slowly add the other things?
No, we definitely want to. We want the full experience.
Including
to be there.
The restaurant?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
The whole thing.
Yeah, we want to be like, here's this.
The restaurant's called Caruso's, right?
Caruso's Grocery. Okay. Yeah, which is, so we want it all to open at the same time because we really believe that it's this amazing collection that needs to open, like, kind of symbiotically. We want it all to exist together from the start, because I think that's how it's going to be most enjoyed and be most impressive.
Okay, so during the day, there'll be a cafe with a coffee program, and then in the evening.
And all day, too. We'll have some all-day, like,
all
concept.
Day, like,
so
for
you
lunch.
Can eat very well. Yeah, breakfast and lunch. And then probably late afternoon, early evening is when the rest of the stalls
will open.
The bars will open. The weekends, of course, it'll be like, you know, 10 a.m. until 1 a.m. or something. Those are the big days.
I wonder if you'll be surprised. Like, I do think of Union Market, and I know some of the surprises that they've had. I mean, I know you guys are there.
Yeah.
Was like the mommies.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the mommies who come every day with the strollers. I mean, they're
there. We've got plenty of space. Like, if people want it, we'll open.
Right.
And we say yes. Like, beautiful. And we have space to do, like, amazing event programming during the day and at night.
Oh, cool.
You know, like,
right.
We can roll in the yoga mats. So
right.
We can do it all. And I think it's going to be a neighborhood gathering spot. The ultimate amenity to people who live in that building, but also in the neighborhood. And like Union Market, let's all remember, the place is so successful.
Right.
People love it. And when I think of food halls or whatever these things are, I think of, like, people go to bars, they go to restaurants, they go to breweries, they go to
distilleries. I mean, we all go to.
They're looking for experiences.
Right.
And it's interesting to us, too. We find that the brewing space, the distilling space, the food hall space doesn't compete with bars and restaurants. It's not like somebody goes, should I go to a bar tonight or go to a food hall? Or should I go to a restaurant or a food hall? We find that they do that in addition to their standard dining habits.
That makes sense.
And that's what we're trying to do here. It's like, in some ways, opening Blue Jacket wasn't competitive to Church Key because people do both.
Right.
And I hope that The Roost will be kind of the same thing.
In that vein.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but you're not stopping with The Roost. You're doing two other concepts, neither in D.C.
Right.
One in Richmond.
Yes.
And then what you're doing in New York. So which do you want to start with? You want to start with New York?
New York, because it's opening next week, hopefully.
Okay, so tell me about the Grand Delancey.
So Grand Delancey is this world-class beer bar that is opening in an amazing food hall in New York called the Market Line.
Now, the Market Line is not open yet.
Not yet. Okay. All of it's going to open next week, we hope. But Market Line stands out because it's 30-plus food vendors, all curated. It's not just like whatever food truck
rolled
in. Like
Chelsea Market. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Because there are food halls in New York.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of them.
And a lot of them just have, like, you know, just like the same things, right? I'll say that. But this one is almost exclusively from New York, almost exclusively from the Lower East Side, and most of the vendors are opening their second location ever. So like Veselka, a Ukrainian deli that's been there for 50 years, has one deli, and now they're opening a spot in Market Line. Schaller and Weber from the Upper East Side, this German delicatessen that's been around since the 1940s, opening their second place ever. So it's very special.
Right.
And we are lucky enough to be the beer vendor. And so we kind of originally were like, yes, this is it. We want to bring amazing beer to a to an atmosphere like this. Because you can come into Grand Alancy, drink 50 temp controlled drafts, drink cask ale, vintage bottles, cans of local amazing special beer alongside the food from all these amazing vendors, mm-hmm. And bring a world-class beer experience into a space you might not expect that. The other thing we really like about it is that the where the Grand Alancy is situated, this is all subterranean. So it's a basement space on Delancey and between Essex and Norfolk. You can get in and out of Grand Alancy without even going to the food hall.
Oh,
so it's like, if you want to mess with the food hall, you got it. So, you know, that's great. But if you just want to go to a great beer bar, just go to the great beer bar. It has its kind of like own entrance in and out. And we wanted to do that just because knowing that some people don't care about food halls and they just right. want great bars. And that's so, the idea here.
But the Grand Delancey is just a bar. Mm. There's no food there.
There's no food there except that we also are bringing in food from... So you can grab food from any of those vendors and come
bring
sit with
up.
Us.
Yes.
Or we are also doing the thing we're doing at the Roost where we're going to let you order food from the vendors.
Okay.
So same idea. We want
with
you to be able
servers,
to
with servers or you have to go and
with
get
servers.
It?
With servers. And runners.
I mean, I love the idea.
Me too.
But in my head, well, we're logistically. Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest, we've never done
no,
this.
No, it's going to take some time.
Yeah,
right.
We're
no, no,
it
no.
Out.
It's going to take some time.
We can do it. We can do it. We figured out a lot. We figured out how to get 555 beers quickly to hundreds of people at Church Key.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you can do
there
that.
Was, yeah, there was no precedent for that. So right. I'm pretty confident. But I mean, and I'm excited. You know, we haven't, we, and like when I say this, don't, it's not like we're doing anything like this. But we were thinking about where are cool ways, like spaces, because we've got Church Key, we've got Blue Jacket, we've got Owens, we've got Sovereign. We've brought great beer to a lot of spaces in D.C. Mm-hmm. And even going to New York, it's like, do we just want to do another brick and mortar bar? Or do we want to bring beer into spaces that people don't normally expect it? So like, it would be like opening a Church Key, not we wouldn't call it Church Key, but something akin to Church Key in like an airport or something. Mm-hmm. Like how cool would it be? And I still dream about this. One day maybe we can. If like you're waiting for a flight and you can get temperature controlled beer in the perfect glass,
right?
Fairly priced, paired with amazing food, rather than just drinking, you know,
whatever beer is just on tap.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So
right, right,
it's like things like that. I think that that is a really, really fun to dream about doing, and that's been my thing all along, is trying to get the best beers in the world into the most hands in the right ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the food halls are a great way to do that.
Well, so you have one more food hall.
Yes.
The Belleville.
Yes.
So I was just in Richmond for 2.5 days. We did 20 restaurants in 2.5 days.
So which, Leisure?
Leisure is fabulous.
Unbelievable.
Like some of the best Indian food I've
so
ever
good.
Had.
And the people are so
Sunny
cool.
is amazing.
Yes, he's amazing guy.
So I'll just preempt this. David Hagedorn and I, he was writing two articles, travel pieces for Bethesda and Arlington Magazine. I get to be his travel
oh,
buddy
man.
Sometimes.
What a life.
I know, it's really rough. and it is really rough because 20 restaurants in 2.5 days.
That's not fun.
And we're not... You know, we're not just looking at menus. It's like we're eating.
You have to eat. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and drinking. And trying everything.
Saison?
We did not go to Saison.
Oh, okay. That's
but
cool.
we did go... But, I mean, we went to Long Oven.
Yeah.
We went to Brenner's Pass.
Mm-hmm.
So, my point is... Alewife, yes.
Jasper?
We did go to Jasper.
Yep.
We love Jasper.
Interesting.
But we can get to that later.
Yeah, yeah.
anyway, but what I think is really fascinating about Richmond... To me, Richmond is like D.C. 15 or 18 years ago. I mean, there's just not as much real estate,
right,
obviously.
Right, right, right.
But so 18 years ago, D.C. had a handful of really good restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But we just didn't have a lot of space for restaurants to go into.
Right, right, right.
So,
it wasn't a deep bench.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So because we didn't have the breadth and depth, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have the people. We didn't have the space.
Right.
So now we're in a new world. And I feel like that's what's happening in Richmond.
They're cusping that right now. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like... Yeah, we went to 20 amazing restaurants. It's not to say there's not more there, but you know what I mean? Like,
no, you went to the best ones.
Right. There's only so much you can actually, that right. that area can actually handle.
Right.
And now you guys are going to do a food hall.
Yes.
Now, where
amazingly,
is that?
The first one, they don't have one in Richmond
I know.
Yet, which is, again, maybe to your point about D.C. 10 years ago. It's going to be in Scott's Edition.
Okay, so
which
that's
is where
Long
like, is,
right,
and Brenner's
and
Pass,
Brenner's Pass uh-huh. and ZZQ.
Yes.
Which is like the best barbecue I've ever had in my entire life.
It's by
life.
Far the best on the East Coast. I mean, It's crazy how good it is.
And I'm not, and I like barbecue, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, you know how some people are like, oh my God, I love barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, it's good until I had that barbecue and I was like, oh no. This is
it's
what it's supposed to taste like. It's so good. Okay, so where is it over there?
It's not far from the Vail's tap room now. So the Vail Brewing Company.
Yes.
So that's the other thing about Richmond is that the beer scene is outstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just this incredible collection of world-class brewers, including the Vail, but also The Answer, Triple Crossing, Final Gravity. There's just lots of phenomenal beer in Richmond. So the Vail Brewing Company, been around for 4 years now, and they have long been our close friends. So we were the first to serve their beer in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area. We still are the only ones that serve their beer in D.C. They don't have a lot of product, and they choose to let the people they think are going to serve it the best do so. And so we've been great friends with them for a long time. And they told us that they needed to expand their brewery. They had a brewery and a tap room, and they were running out of room for brewing. They needed to expand the brewery, and they wanted to keep it all on premise. So they were thinking up, they were like, we need to move our tap room. And they were like, we don't know where we're going to move it. We're trying to think of like alternative ways that we can, you know, situate it, all these different
and
things.
And let me just back up by explaining to people who haven't been to the Scotts Addition area of Richmond. It's sort of industrial park-ish.
It's like Bushwick in New York.
Right, but everything is being redone. So all the buildings are being redone. And any building that you go into is brand spanking new or redone on the inside.
Inside. Outside, it might still look like rough and tumble. But you get inside, it's like, whoa.
Oh, you're like, oh. This is cool. Not what I was expecting.
It's a very surprising thing. Yeah, so Scotts Addition, so it's been booming. We just mentioned all those restaurants. The Vail's been there. Ardent's another great brewery. I mean, there's probably five different breweries in this little neighborhood now. And so they were thinking of ways to do it. We told them that, you know, we had been dreaming up food halls. They were like, there isn't one of those in Richmond yet. And next thing you know, they're moving their tap room into our food hall just a few blocks away in Scotts Addition. And so I think that's about 18,000
square feet-ish.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, we're hoping to have about 18 different.
Now, will all those vendors be neighborhood restaurant group?
No.
Okay, so this is going to be different.
In fact, I would say that only maybe two. And you know, I should say too, for the Roost right now, we've announced neighborhood restaurant group vendors, but we have a number of other vendors that are coming in that are not neighborhood restaurant group vendors.
So you're mixing it up.
Yeah, absolutely, in D.C., but also in Richmond. So in Richmond, very few NRG vendors. We are, the Vail's going to have the beer bar in there, and yet we are going to have two separate cocktail and wine bars on the ground floor, and then a mega bar on the roof. So we'll operate three bars in there.
Wow.
They're going to have the beer bar, and then the vendors are going to be amazing. I can't say who they are.
But who's curating those vendors? Are
We are.
Restaurant group.
Yeah, so Michael and I, but also it's great to have friends in Richmond. So like Dave Michelow and Matt Tarpey at the Vail are very dialed in to the scene down there.
I feel like if you live in Richmond and you're in the community,
you know
you're dialed in. You know everybody.
But they're buddies with everybody, and they've made a lot of great introductions for us, so I'm very excited about the caliber of restaurant.
Now I'm going to have to do another field trip to Richmond.
Well, hopefully you can just come to the Belleville and kind of see what's going on in Richmond. That's one of the cool things here, too. It's supposed to be a sort of like who's who and what's what. And we also are looking at some other southern artisans to come in and do from outside of Richmond to also do. So it's going to be a beautiful collection of food vendors and chefs and makers. And
what are we looking at there? What's the ETA?
I think next summer.
Next summer. 2020. Like 2020?
Yeah. So it's kind of like we open Grand Delancey in the Market Line any day now. And then
The Roost.
The Roost in early 2020. And then summer 2020 for Richmond. And then we are looking at a number of other spots for after Richmond. So,
wow.
Very exciting.
Okay. Well, it's not like you guys are not busy. So tell everybody, Greg, where they can find you.
So for the time being, you can find me in New York City. I basically live there now at the Grand Alancy on the Lower East Side.
Don't start a rumor. He doesn't live in New York City. He's up there a lot right now.
So yeah, I'm spending a lot of time up there. And then when I'm in D.C., you can find me at Blue Jacket and Church Key Birch and Barley most of the time. And then also I like to be at Sovereign as well. So that's where I spend most of my time.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. It is so exciting. All these new plans that you guys have rolling out. I can't wait for the Roost to open. I'm looking forward to going up to New York and, of course, going back to Richmond. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, our listeners, for joining me on Industry Night at the Line Hotel. I'm Nikki Nellis. You can follow me at NYCCINELLIS on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And tune in on Sundays live on 1500 for Foodie and the Beast with my husband, David. We just celebrated 11 years. And next week, well, actually not next week, but this week, I'm so excited. I am going to be interviewing the authors of The Joy of Cooking. So I don't know about you, but one of my very first cookbooks was The Joy of Cooking, and it has been reimagined, and it's massive and fabulous. And I'll be talking with the co-authors on Thursday. So please join me then. Thank you all for listening today. Have a delicious week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.